Hello and welcome to The Chirp, where we chat with Keene's creative minds. I'm here today with the coordinator of piano at Keene State. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. So my name's Dr. Christina Wright Ivanova, and I'm an assistant professor and, as you mentioned, the coordinator of piano and collaborative piano.
So what got you started in music and teaching?
Oh my goodness. Well, I started in music. I was about 4 years old when I started piano lessons, actually in Guernsey in the Channel Islands, which is a small island between England and France. And I grew up there till I was 12 and took a lot of music classes and really fell in love with the piano. And when my family moved to Vancouver, Canada, I continued music, played some flute in high school and a lot of piano all the way up until college, and then just knew that some aspect of music performance and piano was where I wanted to have a career. I didn't know anything about collaborative piano or what that even meant, which is actually the art of accompanying other people and working collaboratively with other artists and other musicians. And when I came to college, I discovered this field and I just really fell in love with chamber music and working with others. Because as a solo pianist, you only play with yourself, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours a day in a room. And chamber music, you get to work with lots of other people. So that's how, you know, the performance side of things for me developed. And for teaching, I began teaching in high school, young students how to play piano. And I really love the journey of teaching. I love learning about every individual student and how differently they think. And it was just a great step to kind of have this as a career, the balance of being a pianist and a teacher.
That's quite the trajectory to get to Keene. So you're originally from England. Was that based on music itself?
Yeah, I actually, it's funny. My mother's Dutch from Amsterdam and my dad's British from outside London. And they met in New York City when they were both working and they had me. So I was American on paper, born in New York. And when I was 2, my dad got this job in Guernsey. And my mom said, "Where is Guernsey?" You know, she said, "I don't know where this place is." And from the, you know, New York, it was a big shift. There were about 60,000 people living on the island. It's a 9 by 5 miles. It's quite small. And so they came there and I grew up there and then moved to Canada. And when I was starting master's programs, looking at master's, I really thought I want to come back to America, in quotes, back. And so from 2 to 23, I had left and it was very nice at the border, at the US border. They said, "Welcome home," when I moved to Boston for my master's. And I thought that was quite poetic.
Oh, that is quite touching.
And I married a Bulgarian and he also had really the American dream. So we very much come from that, looking to the States with that, that dream, that ambition in mind.
That's good to hear. Do you have a favorite genre or type of piece to perform?
I'm really in the classical music world, but it's funny, within classical music, there's several hundred years of repertoire, you know, so it's just this huge field that some people who don't know classical music very well, they may not realize it's gigantic. I mean, I love playing, I love the romantic rap, of course. I love Beethoven, which is sort of in, you know, classical period. I also love playing Rachmaninoff, a lot of the big Russians, you know, Prokofiev, Shostakovich, and those guys. And then, of course, these days, I'm really doing a lot of work with living composers and a lot of female composers, a lot of BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, people of color composers, and just making sure that we see some, you know, some diversity in the canon of literature. And so actually there's a piece that I'm working on right now by our Keene State composer, Heather Gilligan, for violin and piano that you will hear on the March 31st Faculty Composers Concert.
So actually, when I've spoken to you in the past, you've mentioned working with BIPOC composers as well. Would you mind defining that for the listeners?
Yeah, so BIPOC is, and Latinx composers, basically Black, Indigenous, and people of color. That's the term. And so there's just this huge world of repertoire, not only from African-American composers, but also from music from the African diaspora. So just a lot of options out there for representing really high level, great composers and their music when they otherwise may not be heard or featured in a really Eurocentric. I mean, classical music is a Eurocentric field. It's just the foundation of the field. So we're really trying to just open it up and make sure that we're featuring just really great music all the time. So I'm uncovering a lot of gems from, you know, the 19th, 20th centuries. And also we've got a lot of living composers that are doing just really exciting stuff.
Do you have a favorite memory in music? Anything that sticks out to you is really special?
You know, I mean, there's so many. Of course, I could list concerts, you know, playing in 25 different countries. I'm very lucky to have traveled a lot and performed in some really beautiful halls and beautiful, you know, on beautiful pianos and with wonderful artists. But it's funny. If you'd have asked me that as a student when I was, you know, 18, 19, I would have probably wanted to say one of the big halls I played in or one of the high level people I've worked with. And now the answer is actually a 3-month residency I did in Venezuela in 2008. And I had just finished my master's and was starting my doctorate. And they have in Venezuela this program called El Sistema, which is basically taking children who are in very low income situations who couldn't possibly afford music lessons. The government actually sponsored it in Venezuela and still does. And they give these children instruments when they're, you know, 4 or 5 years old, and they hand the child a flute or a, you know, violin or a guitar, and they say, go study. And every day after school from about 4 to 8, those students are with their, you know, colleagues from say, you know, 5 to 18 years old, and they practice and they work hours every day. And these kids are amazing musicians, and they treat it like a sports team. They wear little sports jackets. They go and play in their orchestras. You know, they have very tough teachers and very tough conductors. And, you know, when I was there for 3 months, I just saw this incredible ambition. And I played in 24, what they call nucleos, which are small, you know, basically each city has its own orchestra, its own little nucleos that they say. And I played in all these different cities with kids from 5 to 18, and just saw this ambition, this passion for music, and it's classical music, you know, that they're playing. And what was beautiful was that they would call, say, the 8-year-old would call the 10-year-old maestro or maestra. So already the older child is getting this feeling of leadership, of teaching skills. They help the younger children. It's just this really incredible mentor-mentee relationship that I fell in love with. And those 3 months were very important for me as an artist to in some ways not be so serious about what I'm doing, but to remember the joy, you know. And even if you're in that practice room 7 hours a day, that you remember why you're there and that it's all about music and art and creating something beautiful. That was the most memorable for me.
That's wonderful. Bringing it up to the present a little bit, the piece you're going to be performing, which you mentioned, I believe you've performed once before, Dr. Heather Gilligan's recently debuted Rhapsody for Violin and Piano.
Yes.
What is it like knowing you're playing something that the audience has definitely never heard before?
It's super thrilling, actually. And it's kind of like if you're really excited to show somebody, I don't know, a new building or a new walk, or you're taking someone on a journey, or you know that this is the first time somebody's been to a city and you're dying to show them, you know, the best museum and the best restaurant. And there's sort of this joy in showing the roadmap. And that's what a new piece is. You come along to each new section, you say, oh, look at this. And you try to really highlight very clearly for the audience what you want them to hear, so that they don't miss anything. So it's just, I would say, in some ways, an exaggeration of the score. You know, we're just interpreters. So Heather Gilligan gave me and Paul the score, and it's up to us to have the best roadmap possible for the audience to get everything that she wrote and to sort of be with us on the journey. So it's really thrilling.
Is there anything you can tell us about that piece in particular, what people can expect?
Yeah, I mean, the word rhapsody really does have the right connotation for the work, because it has sections. It has very clear sections. I think Heather could speak better to this, but I think that some of her interpretation or her inspiration for this work was through a couple of major pieces in our canon. So one of the most famous violin and piano pieces is César Franck's Sonata for Violin and Piano. It's a huge work. It's notoriously difficult and passionate and fabulous. And so she took the very opening, not the notes, but the rhythmic structure of the opening of the franc. And she a little bit played with that just for the first few bars, totally different notes, but with the idea of sort of inspiration from the franc. And then as you come along, you just see all of these different improvisations, unfolding of melodies. There's a few what we call extended techniques, which is a fancy word for just, I actually get, like I put my hands in the inside the piano. And so I'll dampen a few strings to kind of make a sort of, it almost sounds like a percussion. Well, you know, really a percussion instrument, or maybe like a guitar, you know, it's these sounds that you wouldn't necessarily expect from a piano. And so she has me doing some extended techniques and also some plucking of the strings for the violin. So just a little bit playing with texture. And there's certainly a playful nature to the piece and a little bit of a nostalgic quality. And it's 8 minutes long and, you know, one through composed. There's no particular stop. There's no movements. It's just one through composed improvisation with structure. It's very cool.
I've never heard of dampening strings in a piano by placing your hand inside. That's always kind of looked like the last place your hands want to be when that instrument's playing.
It's funny, actually, that it's amazing now, the extended techniques for the piano. You know, you can bow the strings inside the piano. You can, you have to know what you're doing and where to hit, but there's actually, I've used small hammers. You can put paper clips. I mean, please don't try this at home and not on our new Steinways in the department. But if you know where to put things and how to do it right, you can actually, I've put certain kinds of tape on the strings, you know, it just all creates these sound, you know, these different sound worlds. And if any of you listening out there are really interested in hearing something really wild, then listen to John Cage's Sonatas and Interludes, where his entire, it's, you know, this is for what they call prepared piano. So he literally prepared each note with a paperclip, with a screw, with, you know. And the sound, you won't believe if you just Spotify it for a minute. It'll be very cool for some of you to hear.
I'll have to check that out after this. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, performances have been largely remote, or at least partially remote, in the past. So what's it like getting to see your fellow faculty and students perform live again?
It's actually, at the risk of sounding a little sentimental, it's actually quite emotional. It's, I'm a pretty even keel person. I don't easily, you know, get hit by a wave of emotion, but actually, I have to say this past few months and coming back to music, in person has been really, it struck me and it resonates deeply with me, in terms of how important it is for us to have that community, that arts connection. And also I deeply miss audiences, because as a performer, you play off of the audience's energy so much. And there's an electricity where there's a moment in time that in a concert where you know that the audience is with you. And when you know that you're trying, you know, you're taking them on this journey and you feel that they're with you. And it's a really special moment. So yes, this is very important that we get back to live performances as soon as possible. It's great.
So the recital is free with a suggested donation to the All Steinway All Together campaign. Those are quite the famous instruments. I actually spoke briefly with Dr. Jose Lacanio about this, and he mentioned you played a big role in starting that initiative. Can you tell me a little bit about that campaign?
Yes, I mean, I came into Keene in fall 2017, and at the time, Heather Gilligan was the chair of the music program. And I remember, you know, I was so excited. I was actually coming from a job in Las Vegas for a couple of years. And so coming from Vegas to Keene, you know, was a big change. And when I started in Keene, I was excited about so many things, but one thing that really shocked me and made me really nervous about the next steps teaching there was because of the level of the pianos. It was just really, really bad. I thought, how am I going to teach on these instruments? You know, there were keys missing. There were just so many problems. And some of them were actually, one was 97 years old, one piano. So I talked to Dr. Gilligan and I said, what can we do? And she said, look, we've just got this brand new president, Melinda Treadwell. We just got a brand new administration. Dr. Treadwell is invested in excellence in the arts. You know, she loves the arts. And this isn't always the case with upper administration, that you get people who are super passionate about giving money and supporting the arts. And Dr. Gilligan said, this may be a perfect storm of you just getting hired, Dr. Treadwell coming in. We've got a really supportive dean, Kirsty Sandy. And let's see if we can do something. So we put a proposal together, worked with Steinway, took about 8 months to get the proposal ready. And then we met with Dr. Treadwell along with Steinway, and the advancement office had a big meeting. That was May 2018. And we were expecting Dr. Treadwell to say, well, you know, perhaps we'll wait and see financially how things improve. You know, we need to take a look at things. And she said, this is exactly the kind of initiative that excites me. Let's do it. So we walked out of the meeting and went, okay, we're doing this. So it was a surprise, actually, and a very good one. And we now have 11 out of the 20 pianos bought. And it's just been incredible so far. So we're about halfway through it's a 5-year campaign. And, you know, we're in a good place. And we still have some fundraising to go. We're going to do a big gala splash next spring to hopefully raise as much as we can, and bring in some really great pianists from Boston, New York as well. I'll play, and a lot of really good people are coming up. So I'm super excited. And that's the Steinway campaign. It's actually the largest campaign the music department has ever done at Keene State. And I think one of, if not the largest in the whole of the arts. So it's fantastic.
So you said spring, it will be that piano performance bringing in the Boston artists.
Exactly. Yep. Spring 2022, I guess that is.
I can't wait to see that. 8 months of work. That's a lot of work to go through for some pianos. What makes a Steinway so special?
So we actually had a tour. We took a couple of donors on a tour to the Steinway factory in Astoria, New York, in the city. And they have an incredible factory. So it was about a 4-hour tour. And I can send you a couple of photos, you know, but we also have them up on the website. It's just basically everything they do. You know, there are obviously thousands of parts to a piano, just like a Porsche, you know, versus a different kind of car. You would get, you know, the excellence from each part of all of the thousands of parts. And the biggest thing about a Steinway piano is that their soundboards are, of course, you know, the wood soundboard is basically crafted from the best wood and with the most care, so that there are no cracks. There's never any issues with, you know, with the soundboard. And so you're dealing, you know, with consistency and longevity, and a Steinway piano can last you know, 40 to 50 years, whereas another piano without the same level of equipment put in and care put into it can last a lot less. So it's also a big investment in our future because of the quality of the care, you know, of also the parts and the wood. It equates to a very warm, beautiful sound. It's just a very unique sound. You've got a really rich bass and a really clear and crisp top register. The action is very specific. We refer to the action as the weight of the keys when the finger hits the key, how it feels for us. And it really is sort of like, you know, when you turn the keys in the engine of like a, you know, 2022 Porsche or something, you know, that feeling of just that incredible power underneath you that you can do anything, and the smoothness of it all. So whatever sound is in your mind, a Steinway can execute it. Whatever you dream of, it's there for you. So it gives you this incredible three-dimensional options. And it allows our students, of course, to whatever they dream of in terms of sound, they can realize on that instrument. Whereas you can't on a 97-year-old Mason and Hamlin, as much as, you know, we try. So,
well, that certainly does sound like a piano worth 8 months of prep for.
It is so worth it. And actually, we now have, I mean, this would be the only, the first all Steinway school in New Hampshire, which is great. And frankly, Keene State is in a region which is an artistic hub, you know, because we're in this sort of Monadnock geographic belt of arts. You know, Brattleboro, Vermont is 15, 20 minutes away, high level arts, jazz, you know, there's the cultural the hub of the region. And Keene has the college, we have the Redfern Art Center, the Thorne Gallery, and now these beautiful Steinways, which is really such a luxury. And we can invite high-level pianists and musicians and not be embarrassed about our pianos, but the opposite. Say we've got some of the best in the region that are going to rival actually a lot of the major schools in Boston and New York who don't have an all-Steinway school. So that's something that we're super proud of. And just to basically connect to this arts hub of this region and actually be the leader in the region.
I do have one final question for you as we're coming to a close here. But at first, is there anything else you'd like to add about the show? Or excuse me,
the concert. Yeah, no, that's okay.
I talked to Dr. Gilligan about this recital specifically.
I know there's so many words in that's one thing, the terminology in music takes a while to, you know, still our students say, oh, a song versus an aria, you know, wait, so it takes time for sure. But I would say that it's so important right now, not only for students and others, but definitely for students to listen to new music that's being composed right now by living composers, but also to support local. You know, you support local food through the co-op, why not support local music? And there's just so many good composers on our faculty. It's incredible the number of composers we have. And actually, it's quite rare to see. I've never worked or studied at an institution which has such a high percentage of faculty in music who both perform and who compose. That's really rare. So we have this gift here, and for the students to really know that and take a listen.
My last question for you, if there was one thing you could tell the world about music and performing, what would that be?
That it is the essence of our humanity. It's our identity. It's everything that is good and true and whole in us. And that everyone at any level can play or sing music, and it helps you know yourself. It helps you have empathy for others. It helps you learn about the identity of cultures, of languages, and it's truly the foundation of our humanity.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's the end of my questions.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I wish you the best of luck at the recital. I look forward to seeing it.
Thank you, Andrew. It's great to talk. Thanks.